Hello and welcome once again to Talking Pictures Podcast. I'm your host Dave, and join with me as always my co-host Brian. Brian, how are you today?
Alright. Well then, what kind of Irishman are you?
I sometimes wonder, I'm like, okay, what's Brian going to say this time? Because you never just say, I'm good, David, how are you? You always got to have something. What kind of an Irishman am I? I'm one that enjoyed this film. Before we jump into Civil War, Brian, have you got a trailer of the week for us?
Yeah, I do. James McAvoy is doing real well in the psychological horror genre. Or even horror genre, if you include it. But I'm stemming from his recent involvement in Split, Glass, and It. He was always an either rom-com guy or drama guy.
He moved into the action with the X-Men.
A superhero genre, if you will. But yeah, you're right. Funny enough, I would not first think about him as a young Professor X. But yes, now he's in a new psychological horror with Mackenzie Davis, but I would sooner say Scoot McNairy, in Speak No Evil. This is a movie I had on my Letterboxd list of upcoming 2024 and in the calendar of ours. So it's coming out in September. And what did you think of the trailer?
It's one of those trailers that I watched, and as it got about halfway through, I was like, maybe I should turn this off now because I'm in. I want to see this, but I don't want to see this trailer now too many times. I'd rather nearly just stop and forget about it. Now, I finished the trailer, but I just hope now I have the capacity to not watch this trailer again in the hopes that I go into it kind of fresh.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
This is based on a 2022 Danish movie.
It's
an American remake, if you will. Which, okay, I'll welcome that. You're redoing a movie that I suppose didn't get the spotlight the first one did. I don't know if it was received well. I'm sure it would have been. And you shoot some A-star actors in this, you know, to capture it. Quite a good edited trailer together. You know, that one bit where he said he was a doctor in one setting, and then later when it's referenced again, well, I didn't say I'm a doctor. And then there's just that real human awkwardness of,
yeah, he did.
Then he's going, no. And then another bit of awkwardness, and then he's like, yeah, of course I'm a doctor, with that crazy laugh. You know, James McAvoy is really good for pulling off the creep now.
Yeah.
And that whole Cotton Eye Joe dance sequence, and then what's going on with the kid, and what's going on with the parents? Like, what's happening here? Say no more. Speak no evil.
Speak no evil, hear no evil. Brilliant. Okay, so we move into the main review then of the episode. We've got Alex Garland's Civil War. So I just want to get right off the bat here. I thought this movie was an utter piece of shit. I thought it was probably one of the worst sequels I'd ever seen. There was no Iron Man. There was no Captain America. There was no Spider-Man. I just don't see how they could market this film and not have the sequel to Civil War be... I'm only joking, of course.
You know, with the way shared cinematic universes goes, take Jurassic Park, for instance. You have the first one. Then you have the second one where the supporting main guy was the lead actor in the sequel. And then you jump back to the main guy in the first one to be the main guy in the third one. So you swap around your characters. So the fact that Kristen Dunst was the love interest in Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, and then they made Sam Raimi's Spider-Man canon to the Tom Holland No Way Home Spider-Man. So Kristen Dunst exists in that universe. So they brought Kristen Dunst, Mary Jane Watson, back to the sequel of Captain America Civil War, which is an in-between between Civil War and Endgame and the upcoming Captain America Brave New World.
So Civil War 3 will
You started this, David. I'm just riding the train.
Brilliant. Okay.
You can't lie for shit, though.
I know. So yeah, this movie, right, I want to preface it, right? Okay, we normally do spoiler reviews and stuff like that. I think prefacing at this is, obviously we're going to be talking spoilers here, so do go out and see this movie if you can. What I would say is the film that is portrayed in the marketing is not the film that you're going in to see. This is a film that was on my we did it in the most anticipated films. We discussed it a little bit. It was one of my most anticipated films for this year. And the reasons why I was anticipating it were not present in this movie. Now, there was a little bit of it. There were certain aspects of it. But it's very much not the film that the marketing has made it out to be. Which I think is a good thing. I don't know about you.
Do you want to elaborate on that or will I speak my mind? I feel like you should elaborate on what you're talking about.
Okay, so we're going to go into spoilers here. So that's your fair warning now. If you haven't seen the film, then to go and see it and then come back to us. But
who listens to us before watching a movie?
I don't know. I think
what's wrong with you?
I think just, you know, give them the opportunity. But
you better not do that, Furiosa.
No, Furiosa would just launch straight in. So for this film, it was very much presented in a kind of way that, from the marketing, that we're going to see a fully war-torn America. We're going to see two different political sides. I think it was very much leaning on the maybe current state of America, where it is very far left and far right, or
and whatever middle ground there seems to be.
Yeah.
And now I don't believe there is anything else. Like, here in Ireland, we have Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, and Sinn Féin.
Yeah, there's multiple different parties, whereas in America, it is very much Republicans, Democrats.
Yes.
And it very much seems...
And hey, if we're uneducated, why don't you send us an email and let us know?
If we don't understand the American political system as well as we think, then yeah, send us back.
We're Irish.
Let us know. But yeah, no, the film, it presented itself that this was very much a civil war between the two. But then once you sit into your seat and the movie gets going, you find that it is very much a film about the journalists. The photojournalists played by Kirsten Dunst and
Wagner Mourner.
Yeah, he's the...
if I pronounce his surname right, but I know I pronounce his first name right now. Mm,
he is the interviewer, and then they are traveling kind of across America in order to get an interview and a picture with the president before the war has come to an end. What I wasn't expecting is, even though this is a war film, a civil war film, there's almost no politics throughout. Like, we are never given any inclination as to what caused the civil war, what political side the president is on, or the Western forces, as they're called. We even have the separatists there in Florida.
Well, the way you put it, David, is we don't know if the president is the bad guy or not. We don't know if he is Abraham Lincoln or Donald Trump.
Yeah, literally. Like, you don't know anyone's kind of political motivations in terms of, like, are they left-leaning, are they right-leaning, are they centrist, anything like that. It's very ambiguous because I don't think that that's what Alex Garland wanted to do.
Mm.
He didn't want to say, this is bad, this is good.
He wasn't making a commentary on the political status of America. Mm. He was making a commentary of what can happen in a civil war.
Mm.
And the best way to portray that story is from the perspective of journalists who can, for some parts of the movie, join up with the military soldiers who are in the middle of battle, raw, brutal, horrific battle, and just following them.
Mm.
Literally flies on the wall, documenting and shooting and filming and taking photos of whatever they can. They've got some bulletproof vests on, they've got some helmets on.
Mm.
They're always behind the soldiers, they always have a grip on one hand of each other, so they're not, you know, getting their heads blown off. They're literally there to document as they are. They are war documentarians, they are war photographers. And the main point I'm making is, I said they would follow military soldiers, so one side. Other parts of the movie, they would follow other fractions the opposers, or the other side of, let's say, the resistance, the side they're fighting on. It doesn't matter. They're not picking sides. They're just there to document what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, to ease up the example, there could be this photographer following both what the Nazis are doing and then showing what the Brits are doing,
mm-hmm.
or showing what the Americans are doing, or showing what the Italians are doing, and all in World War. It's irrelevant what side they're on. They're there to document.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know it's a little bit difficult because if you're, let's say, an American doing photography on what the Nazis are doing, you'll likely get, you know, shot or arrested.
Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes in those scenes, it was like, there's no extra protection. Like, they, although they have the bulletproof, the Kevlar on, and they have the helmets and stuff, they are right there. Like, they are behind the person who is actively shooting.
And
like, if they step out, they could just as easily be shot.
But it's not just that. There is nothing stopping the soldiers they are with to turn around to them and say, you're a journalist, we don't like you. Get away from us, stay out of our way, or they could just shoot you. It doesn't matter. That could happen to them either. It's as if they're supposed to be the press, as they declare themselves as they enter in certain zones. They declare themselves as, we're press. See these badges? It's as if we're automatically allowed to be here. Just ignore us. You know, take us with you. We follow you. We document you. And it's as if it's a given. It's like, you know, stay out of our way, but like, do your thing, whatever, while we'll just, you know, kill these people. Which is just crazy that that's how it happened. It's like when security is escorting celebrities. They're not only shielding paparazzi from taking pictures of them, but they're making sure the paparazzi are coming with them because they can't let the paparazzi go on their own because they'll get shot. That's another, probably a poor example. But the point is, yes, these photographers, they come and they declare themselves as press, therefore they have a right to be there to document, and there really is nothing stopping from them being killed by the side that the soldiers they're shooting at.
They're just or, in as much danger,
yeah. And we do get an example of that where soldiers they're with are threatening them themselves down the line. Probably the pinnacle point of the movie, because as it is a road trip, the journalists, I think there's like three set pieces where they follow one fraction of soldiers just to get a sense of what the Civil War aspect is portrayed between two small groups, to then another fraction where the snipers are trying to shoot the guy in the house, and we can elaborate on that later, but that's just to give you an idea of what are we fighting for. And then the third, because, you know, we're climbing a ladder of covering many aspects of what a civil war can consist of. And the third aspect is the Jesse Plemons sequence, where they're just doing whatever they want. So Alex Garland, while not stating which political side he's on, not making a commentary on the American political status, he's showing us what can happen in this American Civil War, or in any Civil War, and covering as many elements as possibly can on what could happen. Because I just mentioned those three things, but don't forget there was the gas station with the the militia, and then there was the conclusion at the DC, at the White House, the big final battle.
I think what he was trying to do definitely is to show that these things are happening, and just because it's not happening in America doesn't mean that it's not happening. It's just, let's take this and put it somewhere that it's never been before. And that being an American Civil War, and seeing the atrocities.
Contemporary American Civil War.
Exactly, yeah. So seeing stuff that, like, you do get flashes for Kirsten Dunst that she's, you know, when she was abroad, seeing militia kill two guys. Like, you see little glimpses of it.
Yeah.
Of stuff that she's, and
it pretty much showcases how she is careless to, or empathetic to dead bodies surrounding her. She'll walk through
she's numb to it. Yeah, yeah.
She's a war weary veteran of journalism.
Yeah.
Like she's like the, what examples can you think of where I've seen some shit in my day and now I'm a grizzled old veteran where I'm like, yeah, I'm the raw, you know, don't fuck with me. I have no examples to
she's back the Clint up. Eastwood of photojournalism.
Sure.
One thing that I thought was really interesting, I'm going to compare it to Saving Private Ryan in terms of how this war was kind of shown. So Saving Private Ryan, as we all know, is obviously a World War II movie. When that movie starts, we're not really given too much of a history lesson. We're just kind of dropped in because we all kind of have a general understanding. We all have a general knowledge of what World War II was and who were the main players. Like, it, the movie can rely on our own intelligence or our own general knowledge, our own history.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to do that explaining. And then Civil War, I think, takes that and runs with it. It presents this war as if it was a real thing that happened and everyone knows about it. So it doesn't spend too much time explaining, you know, who is on what side, what it is. It gives you a very brief explanation just so that you are aware, in terms of, like, that we know that the president is held up in the White House. The Western forces are moving. That consists of California and Texas. I'll come back to that in a second. And then we have a completely separate, essentially, war with Florida. They've separated. They've gone independent themselves. And they're also kind of pressing up to the White House. But I think this goes to show that how Alex Garland stepped away from the political aspect of it. Having the Western forces be with Texas and California, they're two opposing states. Texas is very much Republican and California is very much like Democrats.
Mm.
So having those two, who are on different sides of the political spectrum, join together, that really kind of shows you, I'm not making a commentary on the current political situation.
Yeah.
I'm showing this fictionalized war and these real things that happen in other countries and showing them here now, presently.
That's spelled out like a baby.
Yeah.
That's easily understood to get the point across that he is neutral
mm-hmm.
in his political stance
mm-hmm.
regarding. He's British. Why would he have a care? You know? It's his own problems.
How did you feel about, so the way I was describing there with the fact that it's presented just kind of as it is mm. and it's not given, how did you find that that was okay? Like, did need more nope. explanation or anything like that? Or were you just able to take it as it was?
I was happy with the way it was. Mm. I knew, I went into this movie knowing what I was going into it. And even though if you asked me what do I expect of this movie, I probably wouldn't have said it doesn't acknowledge the political aspects. I knew that anyway, but I probably wouldn't have known to get ahead of myself to put it in writing that I knew it.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew it internally.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy with it. I prefer it like that. I like everything. I like 99% of this movie.
Okay.
Maybe 98%,
mm-hmm.
Depending on how it can ebb and flow. But everything in this movie that has been executed, I like it. I like it all.
Mm-hmm.
No problem with it, and I like how it was portrayed. It was probably portrayed in the best way possible. It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
It is, yeah. No, genuinely, it is very good.
And I to give it more praise, I love the Frankenstein collection of near random actors
mm.
Alex Garland has assembled in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Dunst, Wagner Warner. Forgive me if I've mispronounced his name, but he was, just in case, if you, I'll hold the audience's hand who don't know who he is. He was Pablo Escobar in Narcos,
mm-hmm.
okay? And he's a fine-looking man. Stephen McKinley Henderson, you'll know him to see.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the mentor to the two journalists. And Kelly Spaney, who, I guess in one argument you could say is the up-and-coming aspiring war journalist who is the avatar for us, the audience,
mm-hmm.
to learn things about the war and the life of a war photographer. And she's coming up real good.
Yeah, I don't think I had noticed her before, even though I've seen her in other stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of going through her IMDb there, and I've seen her in a lot of stuff, but we're both looking forward to her now coming up in Alien Romulus.
Oh,
she's going to be the lead in that, isn't she?
She's the Ripley profile character.
Mm.
Guess who else is going to be in Alien Romulus?
Who?
Isabel Merced.
From Prey? No?
Nope.
From where? Where did I know her?
Yennor as Dora the Explorer. Yennor as I Eat Mass for Breakfast in Madam Web.
Oh, God, yeah.
Okay, and you'll soon know her as Dina from The Last of Us Part 2.
Okay, excellent.
She's playing Dina.
Okay, yeah. I haven't seen Dora the Explorer. I have seen Madam Web, so she's got a lot to prove. Well, not that she's got a lot to prove, but I hopefully
she's a good actress. She's a good actress.
I hope so.
Back to Civil War.
Yeah, sorry. Do you want to jump into some flashbacks before we go any further?
Yes, I do.
Brilliant, Laura. Play that jingle for us. So, flashback number one, the film's American release date is April 12th, 2024. The real American Civil War began exactly 163 years before that. I think that's a funny, intentional, like, yeah, release it on the same day, you know? Not very many people would know it. Maybe people will know it only just from the flashbacks, but it's not something I was aware of. I didn't know that the Civil War was the 12th of April.
I wonder how Americans take this movie.
It'll be interesting to see what comes after this movie. Like, I haven't heard much in terms of any of the political aspects to it. Maybe it's because there's not much of a political aspect to it. It's very much showing it from the journalist side.
Mm.
So I think it'll be interesting maybe in the weeks and years to come. Where does this movie land in terms of the cultural zeitgeist?
Probably just an extra warning of we tried to warn yous and yous didn't listen.
Here are things to come, yeah.
Yeah, it's that whole idea of those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just like, here, we're trying to showcase what can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy. And yous aren't listening.
It's easy for when things are in different countries and you hear about all these bad things and you're like, oh, that's terrible. But at least it's not happening here.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you do see it like this, seeing that they're just driving through middle America and there's a house that's blown up. Just like a house blown up.
Yeah.
Stuff's on fire. A downed helicopter in a Penny's car park. Do you know, like when it becomes a little bit closer to home, then you take it a little bit more seriously. So it'll be interesting. Flashback number two. In March 2024, with an interview with The Guardian, director Alex Garland stated that after Civil War, he intends to step back from directing and focus only on writing.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I think that's interesting. I know that you are not a huge fan of his last film.
Oh, yeah. I wonder if you're going to find time to put this in.
See, Alex Garland, he's, as a director, let me just look at his actual film.
He's got like really four movies, probably.
He's got, so his main kind of films
that he directed:
Ex Machina, Annihilation, Men, and Civil War. I really liked Ex Machina.
I thought it was alright.
And Civil War is really good.
Yeah, I think Civil War is his best movie directed.
Yeah, no, I could see an argument made for either of those. Swing back and forth.
I thought Ex Machina was all right. Mm-hmm. I liked Annihilation for the one time I watched it, and the only time I probably will ever watch it.
Same. I watched it and I liked it. Did I?
My sister loves it.
What did I give it on Letterboxd?
She loves Annihilation.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, it's not one that, since I've watched it, I've wanted to go back to, or haven't intended to go back to at all. So it's just not, I'm not mad for it. You gave it 3 stars, and I gave it 3 stars as well.
Annihilation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Men, which is very, very divisive. It is very, you either really like it or you don't. I kind of came down in the middle, like I did like it, but I know you don't like it at all. You gave it 1 star.
Whew. Do you want to read out what I said?
Yeah, let me just quickly
remind us. I committed an evening to go to the cinema to see this.
You saw this in cinema? Ooh,
I saw it in cinema, David.
You're a fucking sick Alice Garland. I will not be paying attention to any more of your projects, you sick fuck of an individual. You had something, but you revolted me. Star for Rory and Jesse. That's interesting then that you went to see Civil War after that.
When was Men?
Men was 2022. You felt that 2 years was enough time?
I learned what Civil War was.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the repeated trailers. I saw how different it was from what he was doing in Men.
Mm-hmm.
I still stand by my disgust towards the movie Men.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like a thing about it other than the spotlight Rory got, mm-hmm. Rory, the actor Rory,
mm-hmm.
And Jesse Buckley. And it just really does show how diverse he is, Alex Garland,
mm-hmm.
from going from Men to now Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
All his movies, I'm sure, has a message behind him. And yeah, I'll eat my words. I said I will never watch anything he'll do again. And here I am committing a weekly Wednesday waffle to discuss about his latest movie project.
Mm-hmm. I'm praising it as well.
I am praising it. I really did like it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, oh no, that's it. That's there. Look, it's down by your letterbox. It's in writing. It'll be in the history books that I said this one thing and here I am eating mm-hmm. my own words. I've no excuses other than the fact that this was a complete turnaround. It's not as if he's not like a David Lynch whose movies are all quite similar in a bit of a tone that is very much an acquired taste.
Mm-hmm.
Like Ex Machina was one thing, then Annihilation was on the same thread but similar genres but different meanings. Men was just a... No, it was a 180.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely a 180. And then...
He's gone back now to writing as well.
Then. Yeah, but then he's gone back to the neutral type of movie.
Mm.
Like, you know, Annihilation and Ex Machina is on the left. Men's on the right. Civil War's in the middle.
Yeah.
And now he's saying he's only going to now pursue writing because he doesn't like the way movie making is these days. It's not fun for him anymore. So, okay, that's fine. You do you. I thought...
People might know him from he wrote 28 Days Later. He's coming back then to write 28 Years Later. He did the Judge Dredd reboot. He did Sunshine. Like, I'd say you probably have seen something that he's done.
I liked Judge Dredd.
So did I.
With Carl Urban?
Yep.
I want a sequel.
Yeah, I agree. I like that too.
Where we're not going to get it.
No. Why would we?
Because people don't like good things.
Why would we get something that we want? And then flashback number 3, Kirsten Dunst and Jesse Plemons, who play the soldier, the What Kind of American Are You, are married in real life. I know that's one you definitely knew, but maybe some of our audience didn't know that.
One of the first things I asked you when the movie was over was, when Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst were in the same shot, did you think to yourself, you're married?
Yeah, I always do. I always think, like, when it comes to like a married couple, if I know they're married in real life, I'm like, isn't it nice when one of them is in a movie and they go, oh yeah, can my husband or wife also get a part? Like, could you just put them in somewhere? And then it's like, okay, we're getting two paychecks off the same movie. Do you know? I just think it's nice. But Jesse Plemons, right?
Yeah.
He's an actor who, when he appears on screen, if he's not like a main build actor, if he's just coming in, I sit up and pay attention. I'm like, oh, Jesse Plemons is here. Okay, what we got? What we got in store? I think he's a great actor. And it was the same in Killers of the Flower Moon. When he arrived like 2 hours in, and I'm like, oh, Jesse Plemons is here. What could this be? You know, like he's very much a great actor who I really enjoy watching and I like pay attention to. Like whatever he's going to give, he's giving a great performance.
Do you want a little insider knowledge in Brian's brain?
Yeah.
I always liked the idea of him being, you know, recruited into the superhero genre.
Initially wanted him as
Ben Grimm. Yeah. I wanted him to play the Thing. I don't know why.
Mm.
I just thought he could pull off a good motion capture of it.
Mm.
I'm more happy with Ibn Mas Barak, but just wanted to give that shout out. But yeah, Jesse Plemons, he's just going to keep getting more and more and more.
Mm. Yeah.
So
I look forward.
Netflix loves him.
Hey, look, I love him. You know, it's not just Netflix. It's me too.
And he was the hero of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Mm. Yeah, and he's one that I like. I really look forward to. He hasn't got an Oscar.
No.
No. Has he been nominated?
Don't know.
But, you know, that's one of those ones that he'll be due it. Hopefully soon.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah. And every time I see him, I do always think back to him as Todd in Breaking Bad.
I don't anymore.
I think back to his little young face.
I don't. I don't see him as Todd anymore. He's Jesse Plemons.
Mm, he is.
I know you can think actors sometimes, oh, there's Tom Cruise. Mm. Oh, there's Tom Hanks. Oh, there's Tom Hardy.
He's easy to pardon, yeah.
But even though those are high profile actors demanding millions and millions very carelessly and selfishly, there are some actors on a lower profile of the popular scene, like Jesse Plemons. He's probably that guy that everyone knows his face but don't know his name.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
Yeah, he's probably one of the highest on that list. I've seen your face before, but I don't know your name. He's probably one of the highest actors on that list. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good on you. It's not the first time, though, Jesse Plemons worked with Kristen, his
no,
wife.
They were on Power of the Dog together.
And they had a season of Fargo together.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see Fargo.
Fargo, it's an interesting anthology show. Probably not the best season of Fargo, but they're like two of the top five main actors of that season, and the two of them were good.
Nice.
Kristen does was very good in that one. She was actually very good in that one season. So, yeah.
And that brings an end to the flashback section. Laura plays out of here. Thank you very much, Laura.
Kind of Irishman are you, Laura?
I'll pose that one to her. She won't know because she didn't see the film. But so you want to talk about some of then the sequences that we went through throughout the film?
Yeah, I think Alex Garland did a good job to cover as many aspects of a civil war as possible. So we're provided with an understanding that there is dangers in the world. You know, this road trip that they're leaving New York to go to DC on, not a very safe one. So the first sense of danger we come across is, well, we need to get gas. You know, think about that for a second. You pulling in to fuel for gas, something you need to take every opportunity to do so, because you don't know when you won't have the option to fill for gas, because you got 800 and something miles to get to DC. So there are militia men, just casual rednecks, tomfoolery looking elbows and assholes looking gents. Just taking command of the convenience store.
We don't know if they own it.
No.
Just that they're there.
Yeah. And they pull up. They're just trying to be friendly, look for gas. And it says, nah, 300 for a half a tank and two cans. Nah, I'll get you a sandwich, ham or cheese. And then they say 300 Canadian. So I guess that's quite a lot.
It's kind of, I think, an indication that the American dollar has fallen.
Yes.
That's another aspect that we are not privy to. It's not explained to us at all. It's one of those aspects that...
It's good storytelling.
Yeah. Your $300 is nothing.
Your lecturer would praise you on that and then probably steal your idea. But then there are also, you know, down by the car wash thingy-majig.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's called.
Car wash, yeah. You got it right the first time, yeah.
People hanging.
Yeah, two looters that were...
Are they looters?
That's what your man said.
I don't believe that fuckhead for a second. Do you see how open his mouth is when he's just thinking?
Mouth breather, yeah.
Yeah, fucking mouth breather. And then you think, because he's shoving Kelly Spaney down to have her take a look. See, yeah, I'll show you what we do to people. I thought this guy was a predator. I thought he was just going to do some really revolting things. And here comes... War-weary veteran Kristen Dunst. Is that her name? Kristen or Kirsten?
Kirsten.
Coming down to probably step in. And no, she's not the type of person to step in to, you know, judo chop and judo kick him to save her. No, she's a journalist. This is comic. Have a bit of realism here. No, she diffuses any situation by, I'll get you a picture in front of these guys.
Playing to his ego a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, to ensure that no violence or harm comes onto them. Yeah, we'll go down and, as journalists, take photos of those who are in torture or in traps being held hostage. And
it's not even like it's two men that are dead. They're there, and one of them is conscious. Like, yeah. You can hear them saying what they're saying, and she's saying, let me take a photo. You know, she's not like, he's not looking for help.
Yeah, the whole aspect of human decency, of helping people, that is just not here at all.
Mm.
Very fucked up, I might add. If I had a glass bottle, I'd smash it across your man's head at least. And but then that would just cause more. Like, that's not this movie.
Yeah.
And then the next
It shows that the journalists, they can't pick sides.
Yes.
That they are there to get the gas and go. Yes. That's their mission. Because they can't be more so
solidifying the fact that they are there to document.
Yes, exactly. And they can't get caught up in it because it would lead to danger for themselves.
That's the life they live. That's the role they live in. That's the job, as they say. You know, and Kelly Spaney is... she's crying over the fact that she didn't take a photo herself because she couldn't do what the job required her to do.
She just has that kind of moment in the car afterwards. Like, I should have just said something. Like, I don't know. And Kirsten Dunst then says, like, you know, this is the job. Like, you need to buck up or shut up. You know, like, this is what it is.
And this is just the first step off the ladder, where the top is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going through one set piece of seeing what the Civil War is like. And every step we take, every further we get closer to DC, it just gets progressively worse.
Mm.
Because the next one is just a full-on battle.
Yeah, firefight. Yeah. Not huge, like Saving Private Ryan, Omaha Beach kind of stuff.
Very contained. Like, let's say four guys in each
four
squad.
4-on-4 kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and just full on, just... The sound effects really took... This is the start of the sound effects taking action. I know it gets progressively better and standout-ish towards the end, but here, like, it was a real hard cut to explosions and gunfire.
Mm.
And then just people getting shot... While everyone is doing their job, the soldiers shooting each other, the photographers taking photos. And I like that it's the two women, Kirsten and Kelly, taking photos and wearing the helmets and the bulletproof vests, wearing press on the side. So don't shoot us. We're here for this purpose. You know, we're not involved in the war. Won't stop them from shooting you if that's what it takes. And I like how Wagner's... He's the main guy in the crew of the journalists. He's the interviewer, as you said. He's got a goal in mind where he wants to interview the president, and throughout the movie he's talking to his mentor slash, as he called him, competitioner.
He works for a rival newspaper.
But he's still a mentor because they're friends. Practicing with him, you know, it's like a teacher telling him, ask him about this, don't go too hard in pressing him with these questions, so on and so forth. So he's on a mission to get to the president and ask him questions. So he was on that path, but he's also a sweet guy, you know, saying, if you wake up and you feel scared, wake me up. And it's not nice to be scared alone. And, you know, he lets her sleep in the back while he sleeps on the ground. And he, you know, he's going around, he loves the occasional drink, so he's obviously a bit of an alcoholic, and he loves the old ganja, smoking the odd weed here and there. So, and he's also gripping a fist off Kelly on her shoulder to keep her from going out too far.
Yeah, he can pull her at any second. Yeah,
trying to keep her safe, to keep her from getting shot. He's like a bit of a protector, as one boss would have to their employee. So I like that part. And actually, a bit of an element of him I did not like towards the end, which we'll get to.
We'll get to that, yeah.
So that is a prime example of what smaller fractions of battles can be. The next one we get to is the sniper scene.
This is my favourite scene.
This is your favourite one?
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is not about what sniping can be like. You know, we've had the action part. This is a... This scene here, what Alex Garden is trying to tell us is... you know what this reminded me of? Colin Farrell in Banshees of Inisherin, when he's looking at beyond the mainland in Ireland and he sees the cannon fire.
I don't know what yous are fighting for, lads, but it better be worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that scene in that movie reminded me of this scene here, because they were attacked A sniper was shooting at them. They pull over, they get out, they hide, they duck for cover, try to take photos. And there's a sniper in camo. We're assuming they're the military.
Mm. See, we don't... Yeah, that's the funny thing is we don't know. We're never told.
It could be just wearing camo for the sake of it, just for their protection. But we don't know if they're military. We don't know if they're the other side. We don't know if they're the side fighting the Western forces or not. But the fact is, they're not shooting them. They're not shooting the photographers.
No.
The journalists. They're shooting the guy in the house. Yeah. Because he's sniping.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wagner asked them, who's in there? Who are you shooting? He says, no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
they're shooting at us, so we're shooting at them.
Yeah, that's literally it.
Mm.
So I
love that aspect of it, because it felt like it's like the futility of it, or like the senselessness of it. Like, they could be shooting their own men.
Yes.
And the same, you know, for the house.
But they might not even be anyone, either one side or the other of the battle. They could just be someone separate altogether.
Yeah.
They could be someone separate altogether.
Yeah.
We don't know. This is just what it's gotten to, where you're fighting for something, but you don't know what.
Just fighting because it's now no longer fighting for something. It's fighting for survival. We're shooting at him because he's shooting at us.
Yes.
Like, the only reason...
But I think the mentality of fighting for the being one side of the war is still a part of them. You know, I don't think they're Jesse Plemons.
No, yeah.
I think these are guys definitely taking orders from somewhere, but they're just doing their own thing within the area of...
I kind of felt that, because they had, like, their nails painted and their, like, hair dyed and stuff like that, that I was like, okay, these guys aren't
straight edge. Well, then maybe they're the other side. Maybe they're not military. Maybe they don't know, yeah. So that's the thing. I definitely saw a difference, a barrier of these guys. There's some law and order with these guys, whereas Jesse Plemons, complete psychopath. And before we get to him, I just want to say, Kirsten Dunst in that sniper scene, lying on the grass, eyes closed, staring at the flowers in front of her. What do you make of that?
I kind of saw it as like, because she is looking at one flower and it's kind of nearly surrounded by other dead flowers.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, she has the photographer's eye that she's able to see like the beauty in the surroundings of it.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I took from it. And
you see, seems like she's seen it all already. She's done it all.
Yeah, that she knows she's not going to get anything here. It's so like she's
waiting for the right moment.
Yeah.
You know, she's just biding her time. Like, that's what I got from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you, what you said. But the next scene, we see the Jesse Plemons scene. First of all, right, think of this in a real scenario, right? This is you. You're with your colleagues who you're safe and sound with, you know, safety in numbers, safety with mentors, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see someone do something cool by jumping from one vehicle to another while driving. I'm going to try that because, yeah, you know, euphoria. You do that, great. I'm in this car with this dude I don't know, but I'm assuming he's a colleague of a colleague who's colleagues with my mentors. Mm-hmm. So he floors it, drives ahead, right? Just think about your Cali Spainy for a second, and you're in that situation. And, you know, you might, okay, I'm getting a little concerned. Maybe we should slow down, wait for my guys to come back, because I'm with these guys. You know, I feel safe with these guys. I'm Ellie to them. They're my Joel, you know? And what I'm trying to say is something happened because when the journalists arrive, the car was abandoned and there was no one to be left in sight. What happened there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're assuming that they had guns pointed at them. They stopped and guns were pointed at them and they were escorted out and they were brought away. And all you're thinking is, where are my guys? I need them to come save me. And all you're thinking is, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are going to kill me. I was safe.
Yeah.
10 minutes ago, and now I'm in a situation of complete danger. And all I'm thinking is, please, are my mentors coming to save me? Are they coming to help defuse the situation? I'm not supposed to be in this situation. I don't have an axe in this war. Why is this happening? If I only had just not got out of that car and done that reckless stunt. Think about that for a second. How scary that could be.
Yeah. I think, and then later on, after that scene takes place, all the consequences that become of that, they would sit heavily on you, like, because
yeah,
obviously the two guys, the two other journalists that pulled up, dead.
Yeah.
And then,
oh yeah, that scene where, because Wagner is coming up trying to, who's doing the talking, you or me? I'll do it, because he pulls off a nice charm, you know.
So the whole scene is kind of before that, like, this is where we see, like, the real depravity of the war. That these are guys that don't seem to have an affiliation with either side. Mm. They're just taking advantage of the fact that there is a war going on.
But we are safe to assume that they are American rednecks, racists.
Yeah, that's...
That's the impression.
The impression you get from it, yeah.
I'm sorry, they exist.
Mm-hmm.
They can fit nice and neatly in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And Wagner is trying to say, these people are my colleagues. And Jesse Plemons, wearing the signature glasses, this man shoots him.
Yeah.
This man right here, he's your colleague. Pretty much demonstrating
doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And he's just letting Wagner talk and talk and talk. And Jesse Plemons,
he's calm, cool, collected
and,
in that scene.
And he's condescending him. Yeah. He's patronizing him. What is it you're trying to say? Say what you're trying to say. And then we get that scene where, okay. Well, what kind of American are you?
Mm.
Now, you said that was portrayed as, do you want to say this little part?
So, I think that was a really, really clever, in terms of the marketing, is that that line is a very, very good line. It's a very interesting line in terms of the marketing. Like, what kind of American are you? But then when it's presented in the movie, it's almost like a throwaway line of, like, well, are you Central American? Are you South American? Like, he meant it geographically.
Yes.
But the way it was portrayed in the market and stuff, it's like, politically, what kind of American are you?
Yeah.
You know? So I think that was very, very clever. Just in terms of the marketing, like, because that line, it's a great line. It sticks with you.
It's the highlight of the trailer.
Yeah, it's a completely different context within the film.
Yeah, very much so. And
it shows that he is racist.
And in the scene of the movie, it's not even the highest part, you know? Mm. Like, it's just part of the dialogue that some clever guy noticed and says, let's put this part in the arc and depict it like this. And it worked.
Because it's not in the trailers and stuff, it's a politically charged question. Whereas in the scene itself, it's a racially charged question.
Yeah.
Because he goes around and they're all Americans until they get to the colleague that they found. He says, oh, China? You're from China? Shoots him immediately. No question about it. No hesitation. Dead.
But the way that built up to it, where your man was just scared and shitting himself.
Couldn't get a word out.
And he goes up to him, hey, calm down. I want you to answer me plain and simple fucking plain English, okay? Can you do that for me? Just tell me where you're from. And Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, China.
Mm-hmm.
Bam. Shoots him.
Gone.
And then Stephen McKinley Henderson comes in and just ram jams him into the pit of bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets shot. Their mentor gets shot in the escape. And not that I didn't suspect that this would happen. It's quite a common thing where the mentor dies, you know, where this type of thing. I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't anticipating for it. Mm. But I wasn't surprised for it either, you know. And that's what happened. The biggest takeaway was how Kelly Spiney vomited.
Mm. I think that's the only response you have. Like,
yeah,
after just seeing all that and...
Oh yeah, just, you know, crawling out a pit of bodies, like full on. Just that shot was great.
Mm.
Just crawling out of that pit, but that was. I don't know if that's the worst, as we said that these set pieces are, like I said, we're climbing the ladder, we're taking the.
I think
steps
it's the worst
upstairs.
That we saw. I think for me that was probably the worst. I think
even including the big climactic battle in DC, because that was very much mass murder and mass genocide.
I think that and maybe this says something about me, but it's when it's two armies that are going against each other, it's almost like that's expected. But when it's the Jesse Plemons scene and it's just three guys, and they're just
I suppose it's the difference between an alien invasion and a home invasion.
Yeah. It's, two different levels of it. When it's just the Jesse Plemons and the guys, it's they've taken it into they're taking advantage of a situation. Yeah.
It's like
we're just going to kill people.
At least in the final battle, you still have access to help and the wide world.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in that situation with Jesse Plemons, you're alone in the woods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I suppose. Mm-hmm. You're right.
There's some kind of a, when it comes to the battle, you have the illusion that there are certain rules of warfare.
Yes.
Whereas with Jesse Plemons and all, anything can happen right now. Do you know? Mm-hmm. There was no point in the film where I was scared. I was more scared for our characters than that scene. Even in the sniper battle or the gang at the petrol station.
Yeah.
Even that. Even though it was early on in the film, I never felt like the characters were in danger.
Yeah.
Whereas this, I was like, okay, someone's not walking out of here.
So he's done quite a good job in covering as many aspects of what a civil war could happen.
Mm-hmm.
But we get the final showdown. What was it? The Washington... Did they say that Washington is surrendered? Or
they've essentially surrendered. Yeah, the generals have all surrendered and now it's just the president.
Right.
Essentially.
So it's just...
This is the last night of the war.
Yeah, so this is the Russians, the Soviets invading Berlin.
Exactly, yeah. If you want to put it in that terms, yeah.
And quite an extended battle sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were getting closer and closer, well, it was Kirsten Dunst having a panic attack.
Yeah, I think, yeah, she was. And then we also got Callie Spaney, who is very much like just a big set of balls on her. Like, she has no fear anymore. She's just going in, getting the shots.
It's like, whereas this is the start of the journey that Kirsten Dunst was on.
Yeah, whereas Kirsten Dunst at the end, and she's kind of nearly... She's realizing the level that this is at, and maybe a panic attack and a bit of PTSD and all this stuff. Mm. And she doesn't want to be there anymore. Almost. Yes.
And I don't think that quick scene where Wagner is getting angry and mad, drinking a bottle of alcohol. Oh,
after the death, yeah.
After the death of their mentor, getting angry that if they don't get to DC to see the president, it'll all be for nothing. I understand that was his end goal, but he was still that nice guy. He was probably the nicest guy on the team, and I just felt like he took too big of a jump from being that to being almost careless of his colleagues he's been with throughout the movie, because as they enter now the White House, his goal and determination is to get to the president. And I agree that that's what they were setting up, and that's what he is doing now. But it feels like, oh, from one scene to the next, he has become a bit of an unempathetic dick. Not that he was a dick, but what I'm trying to say is, David, Callie Spaney is being too ballsy, and Kirsten Dunst comes in to save her from being shot. And what happens?
Kirsten Dunst killed. Then and there. She takes the shot.
And
Callie Spaney takes a shot of her moment of death as well.
Yeah. And she gets up. She doesn't really look at the body because she knows what happened. But by both meaning of being shocked of what happened, and it's indirectly her fault, but also this is what happens. This is what is expected.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything how she reacted to that and how Alex Garland directed her reacting to that. What I didn't like was Wagner's reaction to it. Where we don't even get a shot of him reacting to Kirsten Dunst's death. We just get a reaction of him looking at Callie Spaney to get up, grabbing her by the bulletproof vest, and he just charges on anyway. Because the soldiers are getting ever closer to the Oval Office, closer to the president, and he needs to see the president because he needs to get whatever he can out of an interview that sums up to one line, but we can get to that in a second. But I did not like how he was just dispassionate towards his colleague who he's been with for years, just dies, and there's no reaction to him whatsoever. I get why, how, as the job it requires you to be as a war journalist, this can happen and these things do happen, and that's the job, where my colleague can die and you just keep going to do what you do. As Kirsten Dunst said earlier to Callie, if I die, would you take a photo of me? And she says, what do you think? Of course she would. That's what it would take. No, Kirsten Dunst she would be like that. Mm-hmm. Now, she was on that little mini arc where she becomes empathetic and has that panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like Wagner's reaction to it, because it was faster than a hop, skip and a jump to his attitude from being empathetic to his mentor being killed and being nice to his colleagues to then being so careless. Or at least Alex Garland not getting us a shot even of caring that his colleague died, and then just move him on. One last thing. I'm going on a rant, but I need to say this to get it all down, because after the episode I'm going to be like, oh, I needed to say this part. Alex Garland wanted to showcase that as a war journalist these things can happen, and your colleague dies. Kirsten Dunst dies. Callie Spaney gets up, and she, as the profile for the audiences, so we see what she sees, you know, she's the avatar for us. And as the avatar, she gets up and she keeps going to get the shot she needs, as one war journalist does, being dispassionate of what has happened in the, her mentor, her, what do you call him, your idol, being killed, and you just caused it indirectly. Portray that aspect with her, not him. He was too nice of that guy, and if you wanted to do that with him, well, then you needed to put in an extra scene or two to foreshadow his arc from being the nicest guy to the biggest jerk, and ultimately he gets what he wants in getting that, I need a statement, I need a quote from the president. And what does he say? Don't let them kill me. Good enough for me. And then Callie Spaney gets in there and takes the shot where the soldiers execute the president. Now, I'm about to finish off my part of here. I just think his arc was unearned and I didn't like it. And you can either fix it by adding more foreshadow to what was to become of him, or you could throw in an extra shot of him in the end where he reacts to the death and show us that he doesn't care, because we don't even get that. And that's my piece.
See, I think that scene, I understand where you're coming from, absolutely. Like, you would hope that he would have had some kind of reaction to her, but I think the intention of the scene was that now they were caught up in this historical moment and he didn't want to miss that.
Yeah.
He kind of realized that whatever's just happened, it doesn't matter, because if he doesn't now get into that room, he's missed his chance.
Yeah.
Like, it's the whole rest of his life, it could be based on this one moment now, and it is also a huge historical moment. Like, if, let's say, if we put this in World War II aspect, if we're storming the bunker that Hitler's in and you're one room away from Hitler, and I get shot, you probably, and you know I'm shot, you know I'm dead, your reaction to me being dead doesn't change the fact that I'm dead, but you now need to get in and get the quote from Hitler. It's the same equivalent, and I think that it's something that we don't see a reaction, but it, I think that there is that reaction slightly after, because we do see that shot that she takes of him killing the president, of the soldiers killing the president, and then through the credits we see a slowly developed picture of the soldiers taking the photo with the president
of that moment,
but he's not there. That's where I think he's gone back, the reality has set in for him,
but
that, you know, that whole sequence leading up to it, he's blind to that.
Okay.
He's just focused on that president. So I think that maybe the arc that you're looking for wasn't the intended arc for him. I think that it is very much he's blinded by the scale of what's going on.
Wait,
he doesn't see it on the personal level
anymore. First of all, I would never do that to you. If I saw you get shot, I'd be straight to you.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you. Appreciate it.
But this isn't a movie for me to fill in the blanks.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't have you tell me that to feel that satisfaction.
Fair enough.
That closure. I needed Alex Garland to do that, because you've had us follow these characters, and it's a little different when they're fictional. And comparing him to the likes of Hitler, yes, because we are how old in our lifetime and how many years has it been since World War II? It's pretty much ingrained in ourselves what that moment would be, whereas we've only spent under 2 hours up to this moment. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I do agree with you, but
that's not your interpretation.
It's just unearned. And if you say that his goal, his blinded objection is to go to see this historical moment, okay, great. Foreshadow it.
Mm-hmm.
Show in a scene earlier on, him
being careless and leaving him behind or something. Yeah, okay.
Becoming that character. Show us that this is the route he is going to go. So it's easier to digest that this is what could happen in a civil war, that when your great mates could just down spiral to that. And if you're not going to do that, okay, fine. Get a shot of him comforting Kirsten Dunst's character. Show us that. I'm literally giving an argument where you could go either or. Where if you wanted this movie to stay the same as it was, fine. Accommodate his actions at the end. Or get ahead of yourself and foreshadow it. You know, that's all. That's all I'm asking, and I'm not rigid on each boat side. Like whether he was empathetic or not, there are options to accommodate both that could justify his mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could have just had that just be Kelly Spenny's character, that she's as the avatar for the audience to first witness this historical moment as first becoming now a Jedi. A war photographer, you know, things like that. That's what my argument is, and that's what I mean by I think 98% of the movie I like.
I get
and,
you.
And
yeah,
that
yeah.
last bit I just didn't like, and you know, so that's where I stand on it. And because look, the rest of the movie's great, so that's where I stand on it.
Yeah,
and there's one last thing I want to say. This is not a criticism or a negative aspect. This is just how it feels. This movie feels like it was a made for TV movie.
Okay, expand on that.
Whether it would be an action set piece or even just a simple scene of dialogue where characters are standing around and are standing in front of something that is very clearly in the foreground, a helicopter crashed or a car or something, and then in the background you can clearly see the depth of distance between them. And it feels not easily identified as a set on a TV show, but it could be if you're thinking about it. This feels like this could be part of the 24 world. You know that show 24? If that's a TV show, it feels like this was in the same vein of that, whether it be cinematography or editing or whatever. Like that helicopter shot at the end in DC, that's the only thing in the foreground, and everything else is just I don't know, maybe I just have superpowers and only I can see this, but like this is just how I feel. Like the cinematography in this is just a standout, a neutral standout from a lot of other things I've seen this year. This feels like a made-for-TV movie. It's not a negative thing now, I'm saying. It's not a bad thing at all. It's just that's how it feels. And I felt like that since the trailer.
Okay.
Since the trailer. And it stayed true to here. This feels like this could pass as an expensive episode of TV. Length of the movie aside.
Okay.
It's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how it feels. But still a great movie.
Yeah. Really enjoyed it. Have you got a recommendation for us before we wrap this up?
I do, David. Boy, I put the time in for this.
Go on.
We were screened a pilot episode of show.
Oh, yes.
In college.
Yeah.
And I don't think we got to finish it because I believe the pilot episode was 90 minutes, but we didn't get to finish the episode, but we did watch a portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what me, you, and the rest of our classmates. It was about how what a pilot episode needs to do to set up a show, a TV show. And that was The Americans.
Interesting. Yeah.
This is a show that I feel like I would have benefited more if I watched it once a week as it aired, with the seasons break in between, because that idea of, okay, new episodes out, going to sit down and watch it and I can digest it, because even though it can be heightened and fast paced, it is quite slow and hard to digest at times. And if you just get that once a week at your strict timeline to watch it, great. And then you have the break of in between seasons. Mm-hmm. Because now I have the power to do that. I could just sit down. I'm going to force myself to watch this once a week, and then I'll take maybe a break in between. Mm-hmm. But when you have, it's like having, you're given two chocolate bars, and you have to eat this chocolate bar at this time, and then you have to eat this chocolate bar at the next time. Well, when it's there in front of you, you're going to eat a lot sooner.
Yeah.
So I watched the episodes of The Americans a lot faster, and I'm not saying I watched one episode a day, but I did rush it than I felt like I would have. I would have preferred to have watched The Americans as it had aired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some shows you would like to binge, some shows you like to take your time with to marinate, some shows you can't wait for them to come out. The Americans, I really think it would have suited me more, and a lot of other people, to watch as it aired. Maybe Succession is another show like that to some people, I don't know. Another show I'd say for that would be for me is Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
Not recommended. Mad Men, that's a very adult show, boring to a lot of people. But The Americans is very hard to digest, and it's about two Russian Soviets posing as Americans in America to spy for their government.
Mm.
And they have a family. They have children who are Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretend to be that perfect family, whereas to the public, posing as their jobs and everything, while they're doing all this spy shit. And their neighbor who moves in is an FBI agent who's okay on the case on what they're sort of doing. So there is that Breaking Bad element where Walter White is doing his thing and his brother-in-law, Hank Schrader, is doing his thing. And mm-hmm. there's that sometimes their paths almost merge and cross. And is he going to find out that his neighbors, who he's very friendly with, are the Soviet American spies that they're chasing? And no spoilers, I'm not getting into any of that, but like, there is that aspect element there,
mm-hmm.
you know. And one last thing I want to say is, I was watching The Americans and I was not rooting for them.
Okay, interesting.
I was not rooting for the main characters, because the shit they do for the good cause of their country, to them it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I'm thinking, you're doing a lot of bad things and you're committing a lot of murder here for what? The sake of what may or may not be, and they make mistakes and they're brutal. They are very brutal in what they're saying. You think Walter White is brutal in the things he does? No, no, no. No, no. The Americans and what they do
is real brutality.
Did I say that?
Yeah.
So, I don't think this is a show that anyone can watch. I think people can watch this like, oh, I just don't dig it, or it's just not for me, or it's too slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get that. I can understand that, but it was quite a journey for me to be on, and I've realised that there's an executive producer who's always working on a lot of shows that his name keeps popping up in the credits, and I feel like I've watched a lot of the shows he's worked on now. Mm. His name's Graham Yost. Mm. I only know him by name. I've seen his name in the credits, opening credits of a lot of shows now I've watched. So if anyone know who Graham Yost is, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I've finished it now. I finished The Americans, and I was very curious to see how it was going to end.
Hmm.
And
it's been on my list since college. I've not watched it, but it's one that I'm like, yeah, I'll watch the rest of that. I like the pilot episode.
It's up to you.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone is going to watch The Americans who listens.
Well, it's on Disney Plus anyway, so
it's there for you to watch, but it's interesting. But I'm just going to flat out and say, I think this show would just be too boring for a lot of people.
So why are you recommending it for?
Because I don't like people who call things boring just based on certain descriptions.
Okay.
Like, have an open imagination.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You can watch both Dune Part 2 and Madam Web.
Okay. The people that love Dune Part 2 and Madame Web, watch The Americans.
If you think it looks good.
Yeah. Then my unintentional, I was going to recommend this. I didn't realize you were going to pick The Americans. But I'm going to pick also a show that has America in the title. Maybe that's apt for the fact that we did Civil War. So I'm going to do American Crime Story, which is an anthology series that I've been watching. So I have been rewatching the first season, which is the OJ trial.
Yeah.
Then season two was about the assassination of Gianni Versace. And then season three is about the controversy with Bill Clinton when he was president. So I haven't seen season three yet, but I've rewatched season one there. It's just a great show. It's one of those anthology series where each season is different. Mm. So you could just, if you only wanted to watch one season of it, then that's absolutely fine, whichever one interests you.
It's from the guys who make American Horror Story.
Yeah, exactly. It's Ryan Murphy. He's the kind of main guy I know anyway from that.
Busy guy.
That aspect. Busy guy. Does a lot of stuff.
Does a lot of stuff. He's quite busy with the monster thing now.
Yeah, Netflix. The Jeffrey Dahmer stuff. And
he's got Eric and Lyle Mendez now coming out. This is now the monster franchise, if you will. He's got a new franchise on the go.
Yeah.
I've heard of it. I've heard of American Crime Story. Is it campy?
No, not
it's,
at all.
It's not.
No, it's
not.
Serious.
Oh, right, okay. Because I've fallen off American Horror Story now.
Oh, yeah. Well, then, yeah. This is good. This is like if you like kind of that true crime, but dramatized. It's good.
Who plays OJ?
Cuba Gooding Jr. There's actually a lot of people in it that are very good. Like the first season, so the one about OJ, it's got Sarah Paulson.
She's an alumni, too.
Yeah, she is. Sterling K. Brown.
Oh.
John Travolta.
Oh, really?
Nathan Lane. Cuba Gooding Jr. David Schwimmer.
Who plays the Kardashian or...
Yeah, Robert Kardashian. David Schwimmer.
He plays Robert Kardashian?
Yeah. There's a lot. It's genuinely very good. I'd recommend it as a true crime drama series.
All right.
And that, once again, brings an end to our episode of Talking Pictures Podcast. If you made it this far, thank you so, so much. We really appreciate it. Make sure that you are following us on all of our social medias. Make sure that you're following us on your podcast and platform of choice, whether that be Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, anywhere. Make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss a single one of these weekly Wednesday waffles. You can follow us on all of our social medias. We are on Instagram, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we are on TikTok, we are on absolutely everything. We're even on LinkedIn. Fuck it. Why don't you follow us on LinkedIn? Just make sure that you're following us on all that. And we look forward to talking to you next time on Talking Pictures. Laura? Brian, any final words? Hold on. Brian, any final words?
I'm not Laura.
Fuck you anyway.
I want to thank you, David, for not just hosting, but for allowing me to prolong the length of this episode review by my rant.
The fact that you said at the start of it, I don't really have that much to say on Civil War, probably only be about 40 minutes, and we're closer to an hour and 40 minutes, closer to the length of the movie. But listen, thanks, Brian.
Anytime.